Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you again to another episode of Africa on the Move with your host, Brother Africa. We'd like to invite you to a very, very special guest tonight who will be dealing with the theme, Speaking Truth to Power through Revolutionary Consciousness and Action. With us, we have a writer and an elder, Brother Gideon Odinga Mokoto. He's a minister of the Joshua Temple of Praise in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He's a revolutionary Pan-Africanist and consequently a socialist. As the author of two books, a grassroots organizer, researcher, father and grandfather, he is the editor of the Revolutionary Theory and Action Collective Political Education Journal, which is better known as RTAC Journal, which is an online journal of consciousness thought. Minister Odinga now resides in Savannah, Georgia, where he continued to serve God and the African Revolution. To Brother Odinga, we'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Welcome.
Thank you.
Brother Odinga, before we get started, are there any other things the audience may need to know, or would you like to put them to know about who you are?
Well, no, I think you've hit the main things. I'm a non-denominational Christian minister of the Yeshua Temple of Praise in Philadelphia that advocates not only salvation but liberation theology, that is, use the gospel to save souls and to deal with the oppression and contradictions of the world.
Okay.
I say I'm a Nat Turner Christian minister and glad of it.
All right. Okay, for our audience who this may be their first time viewing that show, Africa on the Move, we can go to a little bit of house cleaning real quickly. After basically about the first 15 minutes of discussing the subject matter with our guest today, we will ask our audience to call in, and the number is 323-679-0841. Make sure you hit number one so we can identify your number on the keyboard. When we identify you, we will identify you by your last four numbers of your telephone. We'll call up the last four numbers of your telephone. Once we have said that, you can take your question and or your comments. And we would like, if possible, for you to state your first name and identify which state you are calling for. So now, since we are taking care of the housework, we would like to start our discussion on the theme, Speaking Truth to Power through Revolutionary Consciousness and Action, with Brother Odinga. Brother Odinga, the first question I'd like to raise with you is that, what type of things are you involved in right now?
Very briefly, right now, of course, a man of God, a minister, very much involved with my family. One reason I moved to Savannah, I have three sons and six grandsons, and of course, they're their mother. I'm involved in what I call the three can do's. I do what I can do, when I can do, where I can do it. And primarily right now is Savannah's kind of slow to conditions. So it involves research and writing, writing books, articles, research, and whatever I can do to help. And, of course, making revolution, because revolution is also an act of praising God.
Okay, we recognize recently you have published at least two books. Can you at least speak to your first book? Give us a sense of what entails in terms of your first book. What is the major central theme? What you hope your writers will get from your first book? Can you talk a little bit to our audience on your first book?
Yes. The first book, Praise God and Honor to the People, is called Obama Drama, A Strategy of Neoliberal Deception. And I'm going to read a little bit. When I first wrote, I was inspired by a publisher friend of mine, Janice Hollis, Bishop Janice Hollis, who wanted me to write some comments on Obama in a book she wrote. You can find it on hollismedia.net. It's called The Epic Journey. and I wrote some critical statements concerning the Obama administration and, of course, what that administration represents, and that is morally filthy American capitalism. So I wrote on it. She published it and encouraged me to write more, and I did the research, especially when I found out Obama was running. I knew there was something behind that. If America would choose an African to run, they must be moving on a policy of desperation. And though many folks didn't understand it at first, I'm reading a quote from out the book of 13. In spite of Obama's populist rhetoric, even with his advocacy for change and pledges of alleviating deteriorating social conditions facing average Americans and promises of tax cuts for working people, health care reform, Obama's unquestionable political allegiance to his ideological and financial sponsors exposes his charade of populist rhetoric and confirms the suspicion of many Africans. Obama's undeniable political allegiance to his ideological and financial sponsors argues in a tenaciously and culturally embarrassing way for a person that has betrayed his people, prostituted his ethics, and as Francis Nile points out in Pitfalls of National Consciousness and Wretched of the Earth, shows Obama to be a willing instrument of his own people's oppression. I also wrote the book to dispel the myth of the American presidency. You know, they put this myth out, here's this, that has this hand on the red phone and control everything. And I make a statement in the book, if you believe one person, particularly the president, runs the country, you probably also believe in the Easter Bunny, a mammal that lays eggs, and Santa Claus coming down the chimney, even in the ghetto. It's a myth. And I do great lengths to show who really controls the major capitalist forces that control America. Also, I emphasize, it's not primarily hitting Obama. If Obama himself was the problem, it would be no problem. It's American capitalism, but every president that represented America, from racist George Washington up to Obama, has been an enemy of the people, and particularly African people and indigenous people to the Western Hemisphere. That's the essence of what the book goes into.
Okay, I noticed also in the book, you write about the domestic strategy of the U.S. with Obama and his administration.
Yes.
Can you speak to this whole question, not only the domestic strategy of Obama administration, but also its foreign policy as it relates towards Africa?
Sure. There's defeat in Vietnam, the Vietnam War, but especially now, America is moving out of a strategy of desperation. Capitalism worldwide is in serious trouble, and the leading force in world affairs right now is the U.S., but I think I'll show not for long. But the domestic strategy is this.
Hello, I think we have technical difficulties. Can you hear us, Brother Odingo?
I can hear now, yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. The real strategy is to contain the African, which potentially is the wild card factor in America in destabilizing America, our potential. The problem is we don't know our potential, but once conscious and organized, the African is a vital factor. And now that America is in the stage of desperation, with markets closing, which has been challenging, it has lost the war in Iraq, it has lost the war in Afghanistan, it's in serious trouble around the world. Now, out of desperation, it has to calm things down. The thing with Obama is to present a new face. That was the strategy, a new change. This is new. This is different. America has changed. And to calm down the wild card factor, the African. Of course, it's not going to work. I make the example, it may work for a while, but as the contradictions increase, particularly as America goes into Africa and takes the war into Africa, as it is doing, it will expose Obama, and the masses will run over Obama, getting to cut the neck of the oppressor. It will certainly backfire. He represents a sector or class of the African in the United States that are hell-bent on supporting the multinational class headed by the American ruling class. and Obama represents a sector or class benefiting from world imperialism and American capitalism. In fact, he represents the upper sector of the African bourgeoisie. So the book emphasizes class struggle. In the 60s, there was a saying, black is necessary, but it damn sure ain't sufficient. We have to move beyond color and look not only at color, but class. In fact, look at class. There are Africans who will work against us. Some of the statements Obama made recently is clear evidence of that. So the domestic strategy is to present a new face, present a change, and not only that, to present this new face, a black face, if you will, to Africa, to say, here's someone like you that's your friend. And so the book really takes off on neocolonialism and makes much emphasis and reference to the great work of the great revolutionary pan-Africanist Osadifo Kwame Nkrumah in his book, Neocolonialism, the Last Stage of Imperialism. So as we can see, the domestic strategy is not working out, and I'll end that part with one example. Obama came out with this statement on Trayvon Martin. He had to because of the struggle in the street, but he's just using it to push elections for electorals coming up for the two-faced Hillary Clinton campaign and to try to calm our people down. It will backfire, and all those who push and support that, it will backfire right in their face. The African masses will move to deal with his contradictions, his lies, and expose them. I have no doubt.
Okay, we can let our listeners realize that we'll be taking questions in the next 2 minutes. Please hold on make this statement. Can you give our people some sense? Talk a little bit about Obama and his administration as it relates to the foreign policy towards Africa, the African people.
And what I'm doing, I'm trying to read and quote directly from the book. But let's go right to American foreign policy and the role that Obama played. And let me say, particularly Obama, what I did in the research, I researched who financed him. And I made a statement, let me make it now. I know a lot of Africans and Africans in America won't understand, but I know they voted for Obama out of emotions, out of aspirations, out of our long suffering. I understand that. But they knew little about Obama. They didn't know Obama from a can of cheap paint. But they voted out of emotions. Emotions may get you involved in struggle, but only clear scientific analysis, as a minister, I would say God Almighty and conscious organization will get us out of this. And so when it comes to supporting him, I researched where the money came from. And it came from some of the most right-wing, most Nazi-prone forces in the country. For example, I found out Brzezinski, one of the most person that has a history of terrorism in terms of what he projects, greater than Hitler, was his campaign manager. I researched Paul Volcker, the head of the Reserve, Federal Reserve, a Zionist control instrument. I researched support he got from Zionism. I refuse to call them Jews. No real Jew, which is an African religion, would endorse the thing that the vicious, morally filthy state of Israel and Zionism would do. They all backed Obama. So when it comes to Africa, he presents a face, or they try to present a face, that will be in the interest of U.S. imperialism and U.S. imperialism's Africa strategy. Let me read this quick quote regarding that. The Africa factor. What I tried to do is show the role of neocolonialism in Africa and show the strategic importance of Africa. America's military might in terms of its technology, which is its major force, is dependent on resources, particularly in Africa. And I do a particular research in the book and show folks countries and resources. I'm just going to name three. Cobalt, magnesium, certainly diamonds, and coltan. Without that, the U.S. military machine would come to a screeching halt. And most of those resources that supply the U.S. Armed Forces military and its technology are from the Soviet Union area and Africa, but the majority is Africa. One can see the importance of Africans being conscious and organized, particularly on a pan-African scale. So Obama comes to try to bring confusion on that end and try to implement Africa strategy, particularly through organizations that I mentioned in the book, and that's NEPAD, New African Development, and AFRICOM, which are tools of the U.S., backed by the U.S., and particularly U.S. and Israel, the morally filthy state of Israel. So I won't go into this now, but I'll go into great length in the book to explain NEPAD, AFRICOM, why they are a contradiction, and why the resources of Africa are so vital, and why Obama is the one, because they had to present a new image other than the Bush, though we can see Obama is carrying through the Bush policy even more, particularly to Africa, to try to control that, the next major battleground.
Okay, on that note, we're going to go to our phone lines, which is 323-679-0841. We're going to take our caller number, last four numbers, number 7075, caller number 7075. Welcome to Africa on the Move. Your question or comment, please.
Good evening, Brother Lee and Odinga. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this program. I'm calling out of New Jersey. I have a couple of things I want to raise in relationship to the crisis of capitalism inside the U.S. in particular. I wanted to raise the issue of what your thoughts are on the response of the African youth in the Trayvon Martin case, particularly, you know, the efforts of the youth to get the Stand Your Ground law overturned in Florida in particular, even though it should be wherever it exists.
Thank you, caller. We'll let our guest give a response.
Let me say this, Anthony, in terms of that, and especially as a Christian minister, political activism, progressive reform, militant, and revolutionary action is consistent with Christian principles. Let me say that first. That is to say, not dealing with oppression is not carrying out your responsibility to God, in my view and in the view of the Bible and Christian principles. So I think those children, whether they're Christians or not, no matter what religion they were, even if they weren't of any religion, was positive, but I see it as doing the Christian duty. The only thing that's needed there is consciousness and organization. I would encourage, in terms of any youth listeners particularly, to look at a book by Frantz Fanon. It's called The Wretched of the Earth, and there's a chapter in there called Pitfalls of National Consciousness. Without going into details or names, in essence, the students must be aware not to be misled by so-called leaders who encourage them to fight only within the ground rules of the United States or civil rights. That is a grave error. And as the students stumble conscious and as oppression increases, and I have to say as God's grace increases, they will see that. And like the 60s, like they marched over Roy Wilkins, they will march over some of these leaders, I'm being nice and not calling out names, who refuse to go beyond the ground rules of the corrupt U.S. system.
Okay, next we'll go to
and spread.
Okay, next we'll go to our caller 5146. Caller 5146. Your question or comments, please. Welcome to Africa on the Move. 5146. Hello, caller, are you there? 5146.
Hello? Yes, I'm here. I'd like very much to ask the writer about his view on the economic disparity in America. There are five basic institutions that we've been taught: family, education, religion, government. So every few weeks we hear about the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate is this percent, that percent, but chances are the unemployment rate among young black males or twice as high as the average. Can
yes,
he comment,
ma'am.
Please? Sorry?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I said it is high. Yes, go ahead. I'm listening.
Can you comment, please, as to what do we say to our young black men who have prepared themselves and look forward to that day when they can have an income equivalent to their investment? At school, they pass the test, they jump through all the hoops, they comply with the rules, but when it comes to income, they are still among the highest that are unemployed, usually the last to get hired and the first to be fired.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Carla.
What do we tell our young people? What do we tell them now? How do we give them hope?
Yes, ma'am, I'm listening.
How do we give them hope for their future? Well, it appears as though, no matter how much investment they make in themselves in preparing for a piece of America's dream, their dreams are often diverted and delayed because they usually become that to the establishment in a pipeline to prison rather than a productive part of society able to make able and willing to make a valuable contribution. So there are conflicting information there. They get conflicting messages there. What do we tell our young people about their future in America?
Yes, ma'am, I understand. First, as
thank
a
you, Carla, put your
hello?
Excuse me, Odinga. Go ahead, respond to the caller.
The Liberation Theology Minister and the Revolutionary Pan-Africanist. First, I would say we need to put our faith in God Almighty. One, God is on the side of the African Revolution. Victory is inevitable. That's one. Two, in terms of American dreams, the hopes, the aspirations, the development of African people will never be fully or completely realized under American capitalism. It will never happen. It was never intended to happen. It ain't going to happen now. It will not happen in the future. So the question is addressing that fundamental issue. In the meantime, there's some suggestions I would encourage. One, I would encourage African young men, do not listen to anything Obama is telling you. He downs African men. I know there are some negatives there, but there are much more positives than negatives. African men need to look to God, African culture, themselves, and their community. African men need to organize. As unorganized as African people are, let's take America, as unorganized as we are, and I'm saying this to black men, the most organized sector of our people are our sisters, are our women. There are more women in organization than there are men. We need to rise more to the occasion as African men take on organization. We need to read consciously more. We need to organize consciously more. We need to put our faith in God and our people. Not the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party, God and grassroots organization is where we need to put our attention and set that example. And for those men, brothers that are doing that, there are a lot of them. I encourage them. It will be productive. Keep up the good work. Don't listen to Obama or Michelle because they down African men. Seek God, seek consciousness, seek your culture and organization. Power
okay,
comes, conscious, organized people.
Next, we're going to our next caller. Caller 6029. Caller 6029. Your question or comment, please. Back to Africa. Caller 6029.
Yeah. Hello? Yeah, hello?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Carl.
Yeah,
go
first
ahead.
I want to give my greetings to Brother Odinga, and thank him for the knowledge that he's imparting to the mass of African people in America. My name is Haki, and I'm calling out of Virginia.
Okay.
My thing is that just to sort of piggyback on what the sister was alluded to earlier, this whole notion in terms of economic disparity that exists in society. One of the things that is that's the river pronounced. It's a whole notion in terms of globalism. And simply stated, this notion that the ruling class or the 1% of the population can enjoy all the wealth of the world by simply expanding its empire, creating a situation where thereby labor becomes cheaper, increasing their profits. But in the process, the needs of a lot of people, particularly in the context of North America, are not never met. People need jobs, but globalism is not concerned about jobs. It's concerned about profits for the ruling class. And so, therefore, we have a large number of African kids or youth graduated from college, high school, college, who don't have any real avenue in terms of employment. Now,
exactly.
The thing is that what I want to ask you about is that, in essence, when you look at this paradox, what they're saying is that certain life is expandable. I think we have to realize, you know, that our lives as African people or poor white people or poor Asian or Hispanic people, we have to realize that our very existence is esoteric. In the current framework of capitalist society, if you don't have money, then you can't really participate in the capitalist system. And that is the paradox. And so therefore the question is,
if you don't have power.
Exactly. So now given that reality, what can we do realistically in confronting this reality and organizing, you know, in a system which so many believe that in fact if you don't have money then you're in fact powerless. And I don't think money will ever define any movement in this country, particularly the African people. That it's always been spiritually based in terms of you know, bringing forth movement. But a lot of you who have, in fact, brought into this American ethos, you know, that in fact, you know, money defines the being in all of everything. A lot of you have subscribed to such a theory, and so therefore, maybe not at this point, are receptive to the idea in terms of it's not about the money. It's all about knowledge. It's about intellect. It's all about understanding how the system operates. So what can we do in terms of impacting on the youth and to better understand that it's extremely vital that you understand the issues of the day and that you educate yourself and that you put yourself in a position to be educated, because ultimately, if you look at as the system decays, then, you know, we're all de facto enemies of the state because we don't have resources, we don't have revenue, we don't have monies, we don't have access to revenue. We are all, in fact, enemies of the state. So, therefore, that makes us all esoteric. So, therefore, in order for this system to survive, it has to liquidate or kill off a large, large number of people. It has to. It doesn't have a choice. So, therefore, what do we do in terms of lighting our youth in terms of, you know, dealing with this harsh reality, which is very, very harsh and very, very cold. But nonetheless, this is the capitalist framework that we have to navigate in. So, what do we do in terms of enlightening youth in terms of, you know, A, preparing themselves, and B, understand the reality of what we have to do in terms of bringing about change in the society.
Okay, Brother Zinga, before you speak to that, let me just make the statement to my audience.
Yes, sir.
For those who did not hear the entirety of this program, we would like to encourage you to go to our archive by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/ and type in Africa on the Move. We're going to stay in our time. We're going to go over a little bit. So for those who may be cut off, please go to our archives so you can hear the remaining of this program. Then, Brother Dingle, would you please speak to this question, and then we're going to want you to speak to your upcoming book and how can people find out more information about you and your book. Okay? All yours,
yes,
Brother
sir.
Dingle.
Good question, Brother. Very good question. You mentioned navigating the system and money, and those things can help. Ultimately, faith, power, conscious organization, revolutionary struggle. There's your answer. Now, people can run from that. But see, I say that as a Christian man, I ask people say, Brother Odinga, do you really think we can be free? You really think we're going to ever do it? And I tell them, you believe in God? They say, yeah. I say, question answered. Question answered. Even if you don't live to see it in your lifetime, we must struggle towards that. Our youth, I mentioned in the book, our people, unfortunately, are in denial. Many of our people still think we can make it in America, this American dream. It will never happen. And you mentioned poor whites, yes. If you are working class, if you are in majority, you are enemy of the state. And we need to be enemy of the state. The state will never, has never, and will never speak to our interests.
conscious reading, conscious organization. The objective conditions, many of them, that is the outstanding outside of our consciousness and outside of our organization. That's what I mean by objective conditions, outside of those things. Many of the objective conditions for revolutionary struggle exist in America. What's missing is the subjective condition of conscious organization. But as things get more critical, as the unemployment increase, and it will increase. As the misery increase, and it will increase. As martial law comes to America, more than likely implemented by Obama, as martial law, because it's already on the books, these conditions, there will be more Trayvon Martins. This is America. There will be more Diallos. As these conditions rise, as conscious people like us pray and get involved in the struggle and agitate and point direction, organization will develop. All we have to do is look. The 40s might have been, in this country, might have been some non-activity with some, but the objective conditions and organization consciousness forced the 60s. Objective conditions, conscious organization, and certainly God Almighty will bring it up again. These same youth that may appear to be out of it will be the main ones to stomp America and capitalism to the ground. Not just African youth. All youth. Not just African people. Oppressed people. Though I do think Africans will be in a very critical and vanguard positions, particularly in America. So my brother, all I can tell you is have faith in God. Keep struggling. Keep conscious. There's very little going right for America right now, American government. It's losing everywhere, and the contradictions are increasing. They will increase even more. In the second book I mentioned, there's a high probability that American capitalism will not be around in the next 10 to 15 years. Keep struggling. Keep praying. Victory is inevitable. The only question is, what role will we play in this inevitable victory?
Brother Odingo, can you talk just a little bit about what is our ARTAC Journal? What is the ARTAC Journal, and how can people find out more about your books and information if they want to support you? How can they find out more about your works, and how can they go about supporting you?
Thank you, Lee. The ARTAC Journal started off as an effort to just help raise consciousness, and to do that using the instrument of the internet and digital. And to get a copy of it, so let me hit that first. All you have to do is right now is email me. I'm the editor, but I plan to put ARTAC Journal on its own email. And I will give the email address that you can write to get a free copy of ARTAC Journal that comes out every 2 to 3 months. I'm trying to get the I wanted to get the July one out, but the issue of Snowden and Syria and Trayvon, I had to do more research, but it will come out next week. And I'm going to tell you how you can get in touch with it. You write Gideon, G-E-D-I-O-N, O-D-I-N-G-A, I'm going to repeat that, Gideon, G-I-D-E-O-N, O-D-I-N-G-A, Gideon Odinga, @gmail.com. And in your subject, just request ARTAC Journal. I'll put you on the list, and I'll send it to you.
And terms of resources, if people would like to support you financially, how can they do that?
Well, let me put it this way. I wrote the books to raise consciousness and encourage organization, and the money I raise will be towards writing more books to raise consciousness and organization, so get the books. Both books are listed on Amazon. If you go on Amazon search engine, just put books, Gideon Odinga, G-I-D-E-O-N-O-D-I-N-G-A, they'll come up. The first book was through a publisher, Hollis Media, that it really helped me get started. I appreciate it. And so it's listed there, but I noticed Amazon gives you much more display about the book, and it will give you a preview of it. You can go on there and look at it in preview. They're very cheap. I think one is the Obama one is just 16. The other one is 14. Hopefully next week I'll even go Kindle. So if you want to support me, I would say to our listeners, pray for me, be conscious, get organized, buy the book, tell your friends, get our ARTAC Journal. It's free.
Okay, for our callers who are still with us, we're going to come back to you. We're going to give you the opportunity to make a final statement or share some information that you'd like to share with us. And then we'll be wrapping up. We can go to our caller number 5146. I know this particular caller is based out of Colorado, and she dealing with a special circumstance. She may want to briefly share with the audience about her circumstance and her youth or her son, and we hope that people will pay heed to this, because this sister is in a very special situation. And since we are talking about speaking truth to power through revolutionary consciousness and action, I think that we should become good practitioners once we hear the sister call. Sister 5146, make your statement. Sister 5146? Hello? Going to 5146. Okay, I think we have some problems with 5146. Let's try caller 7075. I think we have some technical difficulties on our board right now. Brother Odingo, can you still hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what I want you to do, Brother Odingo, is go ahead. We're having problems with our board right now. Go ahead and give us a summary on your work again and how they can reach you and your final thoughts on the subject of speaking truth to power through revolutionary consciousness and action. One thing I did want to ask you real quickly, can you quickly define to our audience what is revolutionary consciousness and where does that come from?
Very good. I had a class on organizing at Temple University, teaching the science of organizing, and one of the topics was, how do you identify conscious? You know, and I said, you can't go on how people look, what they wear, all like that. Consistency is a criterion to be taken seriously. Consciousness is a question of analyzing correct historical analysis, definitely conscious reading, and then taking that conscious theory, that conscious understanding from correct historical analysis and understanding, and then taking it into strategic action and applying it. Revolutionary consciousness seeks to go beyond reform. Reform is good, but at a certain point, reform, if it doesn't, will become reactionary. So there must be a forward push. Martin King is an excellent example of that. Of continuing to move forward, as he did, where a lot of ministers abandoned him. He kept moving towards consciousness. Revolutionary consciousness questions fundamental. It questions the ethics of an oppressive society, the morals of an oppressive society. It seeks control in consciousness, but there's power in conception, and it seeks seizure of land and power to implement consciously and pro-people ideas. And in essence, that's socialism. Revolution consciousness must move to that. If it doesn't, it will stifle itself. And that will be not just conscious, revolutionary consciousness. I've seen the need for a fundamental change. I've seen, for example, we don't need a national discussion on racism. We need to organize. The only way to end racism is to destroy the power base that allows them to be racist, which is capitalism and the government armed forces that protect. That's revolutionary consciousness. And revolution and revolutionary consciousness is an act of praise also. The second book really takes off on the contradictions up in the church. The church should be leading revolution, because these preachers, many of them want to be plantation preachers and get their faith-based grant. They will not attack the government. They go along with the government says. No. That's contradictory, and many of them are nothing but devils in the pulpit, and the second book speaks to that. To be Christian, and it's a bold statement, I know, but it's true. If you really, we really understand the principles of Christianity, to be Christian is necessarily to be anti-capitalist and anti-American government. You can't pledge allegiance to God and America at the same time. It's a total contradiction.
Okay, Brother Odingo, in final analysis, let me just raise this one fundamental question with you. As a political writer, thinker, Pan-Africanist, what is your assessment of the current state of affairs as it relates to the African church, as it relates to African political leadership globally, and this whole question of the student and women movement as it relates to African people in the diaspora. So we got basically about 3 seconds. I want you to give your assessment of the church, the question of political leadership among African people globally, and address the question of students and women as it relates to African people in the diaspora.
For the church, let me say this. Revolution is an act of praise. If you want to praise God, going to church is good, praying is good, reading the Bible is excellent, but if you understand all those things, you will also attack oppression. The basis for that is Isaiah 61, verse 1 to 5, the mission of our church. In terms of leadership, people are the makers of history, and that's where the leadership will come from. I wouldn't necessarily look to press-made leaders or not even so-called civil rights leaders. I would look to God, consciousness, organization, and grassroots leadership. In Africa, for the most part, the governments are puppet governments and puppet leaders, including Obama as a puppet leader. So, but deep, as Nkrumah said, deep in the jungle, deep in the mass, is where the real leadership comes, and that leadership needs to seek organization, political organization, revolutionary organization, revolutionary political party, and that party needs to be a revolutionary Pan-African party that spreads beyond the fake borders of the balkanization that Africa is in and the world. In terms of students, youth make the revolution, conscious youth, look to your culture, look to the conscious rappers. Do not look to balloon heads like Beyonce and Jay-Z, who are puppets for the State Department and American capitalism. Look to conscious people, conscious organization. Keep pushing. God is on our side. Victory is inevitable. And please, read the book.
And on that note, we'd like to thank our listeners, audience, to this special program as we address the things, speaking truth to power through revolutionary consciousness and action with our writer, elder brother, Gideon Odinga Mokta. He's an educator. He's a writer. He has works available in which you can publish. Please support his work. And again, Brother Odinga, quickly, how can they find your work?
Okay, one, go to Amazon.com. In the search engine, just put books, Gideon Odinga. And the two books will come up, Obama Drama, A Strategy of Neoliberal Deception, and soon and very soon, A Prophetic Political View, 2013 and Beyond. They're both listed there, and on the second one, Amazon gives you a good picture. And let me say this, I pray that you become conscious, all that listen even more conscious, more revolutionary, you join organizations, that God be the fear from our heart, and remember, revolution is also an act of praise.
And we must say on that note, farewell to our guests and to our audience, and thank everyone for participating today on our theme. And thank you for supporting Africa on the Move. This is a bi-weekly talk show, which will be air every other Sunday at 6 o'clock at the same time on the same station. Our next program will be August 11th. Please tune in. Until next time, we want to always remind you that without information, you cannot think, and without organization, you cannot think clearly. We encourage everyone, all people, to join the organization that is doing something to advance their people or humanity. If you find any organization that does not do that, then you have a responsibility to create one. Until next time, on Africa on the Move, we'll continue to go forward, ever, backwards, never. You have been listening to Brother Africa on the Move. We thank you.